This is VOA News. I'm David Berg. Attorney General William Barr says that President Donald Trump needs to stop tweeting about the Justice Department. AP's Tim McGuire has details.
Attorney General William Barr tells ABC's Pierre Thomas,
I think it's time to stop the tweeting about Department of Justice criminal cases.
Barr says Trump's tweets have done real damage.
People in the department are men and women here about cases pending in the department and about judges before whom we have cases make it impossible for me to do my job.
The ABC interview comes after Barr overruled his own prosecutors who recommended Trump's longtime confidant Roger Stone be sentenced to 7 to 9 years in prison, and then he took the extraordinary step of lowering the amount while not offering an amended number. Barr is scheduled to testify to Congress at the end of next month. Tim McGuire, Washington.
The U.S. Senate backed legislation Thursday to limit President Donald Trump's ability to wage war against Iran, rebuking the president after a missile strike killed an Iranian military commander, and Tehran's retaliation after that strike raised fears of a broader conflict. The measure, sponsored by Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia, says that Trump has to win approval from Congress before engaging in further military action against Iran. Kaine and other supporters said the resolution was not about Trump or even the presidency, but instead was an important reassertion of congressional power to declare war.
When we speak in a bipartisan way on a matter of war and peace, we send a message to the troops that is a message of unity, and that's what the troops and their families deserve.
Eight Republicans joined with the Democrats to pass the resolution by a 55-45 vote. President Trump has promised to veto it. This is VOA News. The Health Commission in Hubei Province, China, says the number of deaths from the coronavirus rose by 116 on Thursday. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the World Health Organization says a dramatic increase in the number of cases was due to a change in the way suspected cases are diagnosed and reported.
The executive director of the WHO's Health Emergencies Program, Michael Ryan, says the cases are not based on a clinically confirmed instance, but on lesser symptoms exhibited by patients.
This allows clinicians to move and report cases more quickly, not having to wait for lab confirmation, ensuring that people get to clinical care more quickly. And also allows public health responses in terms of contact tracing and other important public health measures to be initiated.
Ryan says countries still have an opportunity to prepare for the potential spread of the virus. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. prosecutors on Thursday added trade secret theft charges to their bank fraud case against the Chinese smartphone maker Huawei Technologies. As Reuters' Gillian Kitchener reports, it further escalates the U.S. battle with the world's largest telecommunications equipment maker.
The U.S. government on Thursday added fresh charges to its criminal case against Chinese smartphone maker Huawei. The new indictment charges Huawei Technologies with racketeering, as well as conspiring to steal trade secrets from six U.S. technology companies in order to grow Huawei. The superseding indictment, filed in a Brooklyn federal court, also contains new allegations about Huawei's involvement in sanctioned countries such as Iran and North Korea. Huawei pleaded not guilty last year to charges that included bank and wire fraud. As part of that indictment, its chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou, was arrested in December 2018 and has been under house arrest in Canada.
That's Gillian Kitchener reporting. A veteran praised by President Donald Trump as a success story didn't actually benefit from the program touted at the president's State of the Union address. AP's Mike Gracia reports.
At his State of the Union address on February 4th, President Donald Trump singled out an invited guest while touting his administration's Opportunity Zones program.
Opportunity Zones are helping Americans like Army veteran Tony Rankins.
3 days later, Trump invited Tony Rankins to speak at the North Carolina Opportunity Now Summit.
I would like to thank the president for signing this bill, too, because without it, I wouldn't be standing here before you right now.
However, the job Rankins landed in Nashville 2 years ago didn't receive Opportunity Zone's tax breaks. Rankins will start work at a warehouse in Cincinnati next month at a site using the breaks. Mike Gracia, Washington.
For more, be sure to visit our website, voanews.com. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, February 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa delivered his annual State of the Nation speech on Thursday amid opposition protests.
Our country is facing a stark reality. Our economy has not grown at any meaningful rate for over a decade. Even as jobs are created, the rate of unemployment continues to deepen.
Sudan reaches a deal with families of victims of the 2000 Al-Qaeda attack on the USS Cole. The Liberian government says it is doing all it can to ameliorate an acute gasoline shortage. Gambia's opposition leader denies allegations of tax evasion, and protesters have shut down the offices of the Malawi Electoral Commission in 10 districts of the country.
All what we need is Jen Ansah to resign, and now we have even included all the commissioners of the mayor because they have proven to be incompetent.
Chinese nationals entering Kenya are required to quarantine themselves for no less than 15 days as part of coronavirus prevention. And a U.S.-funded charity is installing solar panels to maternity wards of remote Zimbabwean hospitals. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa was upstaged by angry opposition lawmakers who delayed his annual State of the Nation address by 90 minutes on Thursday amid protests over his cabinet and management. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa didn't even get to speak before the inevitable happened. Commotion in the gallery led by the economic freedom fighters. The far-left political party, easily identifiable in Parliament by their resplendent red workmen's outfits, had warned that they would raise a fuss over the nation's struggling electricity company and the member of cabinet they feel is responsible. They also protested the attendance of South Africa's last apartheid president, F.W. de Klerk. That disturbance sucked up the first 90 minutes of the proceedings, culminating in National Assembly Speaker Thandi Modise ordering them to leave.
You don't have to tell us to leave the house already.
Honorable members, leave the house!
When he finally took the podium to speak, on his fifth attempt to do so, Ramaphosa did not mince words about South Africa's challenges.
Our country is facing a stark reality. Our economy has not grown at any meaningful rate for over a decade. Even as jobs are created, the rate of unemployment continues to deepen. The recovery of our economy has stalled as persistent energy shortages have disrupted businesses and also people's lives. Several state-owned enterprises are in distress, and our public finances are under severe pressure. It is you, the people of South Africa, who carry this burden, confronted by rising living costs, unemployment, unable to escape poverty, hopelessness, and unable to realize our potential as a people.
He continued to note his nation's great resilience and achievements and vowed a number of measures, including improvements in education, healthcare, land distribution, agriculture, and government financing. But the chaos made clear that the so-called Ramaphoria that marked the beginning of his term may be beginning to fade. He was brought into office in 2018 after leading an intra-party attempt to push out unpopular, scandal-ridden President Jacob Zuma. The ruling African National Congress, with him at the head, was then re-elected in 2019. Ramaphosa noted that South Africa's role on the continent has changed as it took the helm of the African Union this year.
We take up this responsibility at an important time for our continent. This year, the Africa Continental Free Trade Area Agreement comes into effect. This is our moment as the people of the continent to give effect to the dreams of the founding fathers of African unity.
He added to applause that South Africa would host a trade summit and another summit on reducing violence on the continent later this year. But speech watchers said that behind Ramaphosa's words lies concern over whether he can actually pull off any of these big ideas in this difficult political climate. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Protesters in Malawi have shut down the offices of the Malawi Electoral Commission, also known as MEG, in 10 districts in an attempt to force all commissioners to resign, including Chairperson Jean Ansah. The action comes 10 days after the Constitutional Court nullified last May's presidential election because of massive and systematic irregularities. The court also ordered fresh elections, but as Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, the commissioners have appealed the court decision and are refusing to step down.
In Blantyre, the protesters used steel iron chains and huge locks to seal the gate of the main entrance to MEG headquarters. Masauko Tawe is the Southern Region Coordinator for the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, which organized the protests.
What we are trying to mean here is nobody should get here as long as they are not resigning. All what we need is Jane Ansah to resign, and now we have even included all the commissioners of the MEG because they have proven to be incompetent. We need people who have the competence.
And they shut down follows a constitutional court verdict on February 3, which nullified last May's presidential elections because of massive and systematic irregularities. The court said the irregularities showed the MEG's incompetence in handling the presidential elections and ordered fresh elections in 150 days. This week, members of parliament questioned the election commissioners at a public hearing to determine if they are capable of running fresh elections. The commissioners, including Chairperson Jane Ansah, dismissed the accusations of incompetency. Some said they will resign only if the Supreme Court of Appeal forced them, while others said they will not resign at all. But HRDC's Tawe says mechanisms are in place to safeguard the shutdown.
We are going to monitor each and every day. You come, you check, you see people here monitoring. And we are not stopping here. It's a continuous demonstration till we see all these commissioners, including the CEO, resign.
Mustafa Hussein is the political science lecturer at the Chancellor College of the University of Malawi. He told VOA shutting down the MEG offices is ill-timed.
Because the case of MEG is in the courts. So in that sense, I would say the act of shutting down the offices might be going too far and might not augur very well with the laws of Malawi.
Hosseini also said the shutdown would affect MEG preparations for the fresh elections expected to be held in June. Ansah told Parliament Wednesday that the Electoral Commission is currently working on the budget for the fresh elections. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Sudan's transitional government says it has agreed to a settlement with families of those killed and injured in the 2000 bombing of the USS Cole in Yemen. Al-Qaeda suicide bombers trained in Sudan were responsible for the attack. Sudan, which maintains it had nothing to do with the bombing, is hoping to be removed from the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
17 U.S. sailors were killed and more than 30 others wounded when an Al-Qaeda speedboat loaded with explosives rammed the USS Cole off the coast of Yemen in 2000. Saudi owned Al Arabiya TV reported that Jamal Badawi, one of the masterminds of the attack on the Cole, was killed by a U.S. drone strike in January of 2019. Badawi and another attacker were trained by Al-Qaeda in Sudan during the 1990s. A Washington judge ordered Khartoum in 2012 to pay $300 million to victims' families, saying Sudan was responsible for the attack. Sudan's justice ministry indicated in a statement Thursday, saying that it had signed a deal with victims' families on February 7, but did not indicate how much compensation it would pay. The statement also said that Sudan was not responsible for the attack on the USS Cole and had agreed to the deal to fulfill the conditions put by the American administration to remove Khartoum from its terrorism list. Interim Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdouk has said repeatedly that the Sudanese people have never supported terrorism and that one of his top priorities was to remove Sudan from the terrorism list. Sudan has been on the list since 1993. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 14. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. There continues to be an acute shortage of gasoline in Liberia for nearly a month now, resulting in long queues of people waiting each day to get gasoline for their private or commercial vehicles. Information Minister Eugene Nabwe says the government has imported into the country thousands of gallons of gasoline to be distributed to filling stations throughout the country beginning today, Friday.
We do have an acute shortage of gasoline. It has been going on for just over 2 weeks. And the main reason for this is that we have discovered, even at the superficial level, that the reported stock is the proximity of our neighbors. The government is currently importing several thousand gallons of petroleum product from our neighboring countries, including Sierra Leone and La Côte d'Ivoire.
So if the reasons that you gave are the reasons for the shortage, Mr. Minister, can it be said that maybe some poor planning went into this process, which has resulted so far to the shortage?
Well, the president has constituted a task force to determine the scope and the extent of the problem that has happened, and that task force will also recommend some permanent remedial measures. Like I said earlier, at the superficial level, we took a look at what we had on paper. The reports from the petroleum importers of the importing and the security nature of this, we have imported as a government into the country several thousand gallons of gasoline. And beginning early tomorrow morning, that will be distributed to the various petroleum filling stations. So we are solving the problems on an emergency basis. We also have a medium-term plan. What we're going to do going forward is for the government itself to maintain a strategic reserve of not just petroleum products, but also of all essential commodities on the Liberian market. So all of this crisis is a permanent solution, and these are the actions that we are taking as a government to first solve the problem, determine that it's not going to recur, and then going forward, we set up the strategic reserve structure that will ensure that no more will we run out of essential commodities.
Did you send tankers to neighboring Guinea and Sierra Leone for help, for some gasoline?
No, not help. Listen, Liberia does not refine petroleum products. All of the petroleum products that we utilize in the country, we buy. So, yes, we engaged the government of Sierra Leone because of the huge quantity of petroleum products we are buying from them, which are their own stock. But the government purchased petroleum product out of Sierra Leone, and that has started to arrive in the country already. And beginning tomorrow morning, it will be distributed to the various petroleum stations throughout the country so that we can alleviate the problem that we have currently.
That was Eugene Nabwe, Liberia's information minister, speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. In the Gambia, the leader of the main opposition, United Democratic Party, Usainu Dabo, is denying allegations of tax evasion. This followed a recent Supreme Court ruling in which the former Gambian vice president was asked by the court to settle his tax arrears to the state. Pandero Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The Supreme Court of the Gambia recently rejected an appeal filed by Usainu Dabo, the leader of the United Democratic Party, UDP. Dabo had contested a decision of a commission of inquiry that was set up during Jammeh's regime to investigate the tax liabilities of businesses and Gambian citizens. The commission was widely referred to as the Mama Singh Atta Tax Commission. It had cited Dabo for not paying taxes. Dabo had close to 2 million Gambian dollars in tax arrears. In a national Facebook broadcast, the UDP leader said he never evaded taxes as claimed by his critics.
I want to make one thing abundantly clear, that the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeal, and the Commission of Inquiry have never found me to have committed any tax evasion. If I had, if that was any finding, I would have served my prison term for that, because tax evasion is a crime. And in Jammeh's era, the Commission of Inquiry could not have found me to have committed an offense, and I get immune from prosecution.
Dabo admits owing taxes to the state, but he pointed out that his tax arrears shouldn't be construed as tax evasion.
The simple judgment of the Court of Appeal is that I owe tax liabilities. It is quite clear. But of course, my political detractors, my opponents, are spinning it to say it was tax evasion. And I want to make it abundantly clear that I have not evaded tax. I owe tax. I had contested that I owe the amount. And the Court of Appeal and the Supreme Court said that my contest cannot be upheld. It's as simple as that.
This was not the first time that Dabo has been cited for not paying taxes. He had to settle his tax arrears during Jammeh's rule to enable him to be able to contest elections. Dabo has no intention of asking the Supreme Court to review its decision. He says he is going to settle his tax arrears.
As a litigant, I just have to accept that this is the verdict of the courts, and I would abide by the verdict of the court and clear my tax liabilities.
The Supreme Court has upheld the findings of the Mama Singate Commission. The court ruled that the commission was not only right, but also consistent in its findings on Usainu Dabo's tax liability. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Chinese nationals entering Kenya are required to quarantine themselves for a period of not less than 15 days as part of the fight against the coronavirus. Speaking Thursday in Nairobi, Chinese ambassador to Kenya, Wu Peng, gave assurance that Kenyan students studying in China are safe and free from the virus. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the ambassador's assurance comes after Kenyan students studying in China asked their government on social media to evacuate them.
The Chinese ambassador to Kenya, Wu Peng, speaking on Thursday at a forum in Nairobi with the Kenya editor, said that Kenyan students in China are safe and that his government has the capacity and resources to manage the public health. Mr. Peng says all the Chinese entering Kenya must be isolated for at least 15 days before attending to the activities in Kenya.
We have required all Chinese nationals coming back from China, whatever they have symptoms or not, to isolate themselves at home. Even they don't have any symptoms, they must isolate. At this difficult time, our Kenya and African friends have given China strong support. We cherish it very, very. No cases of infection among Kenyans in China has been reported so far.
Earlier, the association students studying in Wuhan asked the government to evacuate them, saying they were running out of supplies and being tortured psychologically. The Kenya's Foreign Affairs Permanent Secretary, Macharia Kamau, has assured the students of their safety and that in case of an emergency, the government will take necessary measures.
The majority of countries have recognized that the best possible option under the current circumstances might be indeed to remain where everybody is, to avoid any challenges that might transpire in the process of evacuation.
On the other hand, Health Cabinet Secretary Cecil Kariuki said that Kenya has set up enough facility for isolation of the persons traveling from China at its entry points and that Kenyans should desist from traveling to affected countries.
The national government has also taken over a facility with an additional bed capacity of 120 beds at Bagathi District Hospital in a bid to enhance our readiness, isolation facilities, and have prepositioned personal protective equipment.
Already, more than 1,000 people have died in China as thousands are being affected by the virus. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A U.S.-funded charity has started installing solar panels to provide electricity in the maternity wards of remote Zimbabwean hospitals. Columbus Mavunga reports.
People celebrated at British Government Hospital after a U.S. charity known as We Care Solar installed solar panels in the medical center's labor and maternity wards this week. The hospital is one of more than 200 institutions that have benefited from the $3 million project by the California-based NGO. 18-year-old Bridget Duve delivered her son Rodney under the solar-powered lights Tuesday night. Two of her sisters delivered their babies when the hospital had no solar energy.
Tafaro chaizu kutubatisiro ma solar anunga chitibatisiro kana
Dube says, "We are really happy. This is a real relief. We now have solar lights, which are handy when there's no electricity. Our children and those in the labor ward will no longer be in darkness. Because of recurring droughts and dilapidated power generating equipment, Zimbabwe is dealing with massive power outages that can go on for days."
That was Columbus Mavunga reporting from Harare. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the Total CAF Super Cup match. Tickets to the game to be played in the Qatari capital of Doha on Friday has been sold out. Osporans of Tunisia will take on Egyptian side Zamalek at the Thani Bin Zasmin Stadium in the match between the winners of CAF's two continental club competitions. Football fans have demonstrated high interest in the game as supporters have bought all the tickets for the match hosted by the Qatar Football Association. Staying with CAF news, an audit into the state of the Confederation of African Football has revealed an organization in a state of disarray, both with regards to finances and governance. Carried out by PricewaterhouseCoopers, the audit describes CAF's accounting as unreliable and not trustworthy, as it highlights transactions totaling in excess of $20 million, which either have little or no supporting documentation or are considered higher risk. One area it suggests further investigation is the role played by CAF President Ahmed Ahmed and his attaché Loïc Gérard, among others, in the deal with French company Tactical Steel, some of whose financial dealings with CAF are described as highly suspicious. Staying with football news, CAF 2019 AFCON leading scorer and Manchester United's new signing, Nigeria's Odion Ighalo, is training away from the club this week as a precautionary measure following his arrival from China. The Nigerian striker has been training in Manchester's Taekwondo Center in the Etihad campus and will be part of United's travelling party when they face Chelsea at Stamford Bridge on Monday night. United have decided on the policy because of the risk, albeit extremely slight, posed by coronavirus. They decided against taking the striker on their winter break training camp in Spain because of concerns he may have difficulty getting back into the UK. In transfer news, English Premier League club Chelsea FC on Thursday announced an agreement with Dutch club Ajax Amsterdam to sign Moroccan winger Hakim Ziyech. The fee for the Moroccan, who was contracted to Ajax until June 2020, is €40 million and could rise to €44 million depending on add-ons. Ziyech is seen as a possible replacement for Belgian Eden Hazard, who left Chelsea to join Spanish giants Real Madrid in June last year. In volleyball news, Kenya women volleyball team, also known as the Malaika Strikers, will start their Tokyo Olympics campaign against host Japan on July 26th. Malaika Strikers, who are drawn in tough Pool A, will then face Korea 2 days later before taking on European champions Serbia on July the 30th. That's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa was upstaged by angry opposition lawmakers who delayed his annual State of the Nation address by 90 minutes on Thursday amid protests over his cabinet and management. And that is it for this Friday, February 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
We were staying in Paris to get away from your parents, and I thought, wow.
This week, Border Crossings takes you on a musical journey around the world. Tune in February 17th at 1500 Universal, as we're going to be looking at songs inspired by different geographical locations. Barcelona. Come visit the places that inspire some of your favorite tunes. Only on VOA.
Yeah.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.